Hello, and welcome back to Stories from the Ashes, where we pontificate on good books and the stories that define and refine us. I'm your host, Amber, and I am here today with a very special guest who you have heard stories of, and now you'll get to meet her in form, my beloved eldest daughter, Inara. Welcome, Inara.
Hello.
So,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. So we usually get to know our guests one and all by asking them three books that have highly affected their lives or influenced them. And I did tell you that you couldn't pick three books from the same series. So I know that added extra challenge for you. So what do you have?
I'd probably say most books by E. Nesbitt, especially her Book of Dragons and The Five Children and It.
Mm-hmm. That's a fun one.
And then Lord of the Rings and the Green Ember series as well.
Yes. I like how you just put entire series in as books. I'll allow it. Do you want to tell us just a little bit about yourself in general? How old you are? Anything that you find particularly interesting about yourself?
I am 16 and the oldest of five crazy kids. I do dance and I like to write and read, obviously. It's kind of impossible to not like reading in this house.
Daddy tries though, doesn't he?
Well, at least he's reading The Hobbit.
Yes. That's yes.
An improvement.
That is great. So you are 16. Things that people might know from you or know about you from other episodes would be that you are in Civil Air Patrol. And they also would know that you were a delayed reader. So you had all the heart and none of the ability to read at five when you started hardcore begging for lessons. And it clicked for you around 8.5. And I think that's part of why Edith Nesbitt is probably so special to you, is you were listening to like 40 hours a month of Edith Nesbitt audiobooks in the months leading up to when it finally just clicked for you. I don't know if you remember that that's what you were reading at that time or not.
No, I do. I don't know how many times I've read like all of her dragon stories and The Five Children in It, and I really like The Phoenix and the Carpet as well. Those were my favorites of her books.
Those are really good ones. Something that I don't know if I ever told you this, but when you were about six, I had a complete panic attack because, no, not when you were six, when you were seven. When you turned seven, and we were still trying with the reading lessons and it just was not clicking for you, I was panicking because we had so many little babies in the house and there were so many beautiful books that I had read at your age and I didn't want you to miss them. I didn't want you to become so old that they weren't of interest to you anymore and to miss out on the opportunity to hear these beautiful stories like Pollyanna and Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm and Understood Betsy. And there were only so many hours in the day that I could read aloud, which was a pleasure. Like, I loved reading aloud to you and Gemma, but with the little baby boys of insanity underfoot, it was really hard to do that as much as we wanted. So I was prioritizing reading aloud the books that I wanted to have fresh in my mind, so that I could have conversations with you about them. And then just, it was such a relief to me when I realized that you could listen to all those books. You didn't have to read them. This was the time to listen to them. And that's when we started hardcore listening to audiobooks so that you could be listening to them while you were playing and still not miss out on any of those stories. So I am very grateful that we live in a time where we had easy access to hours and hours and hours of audiobooks. Do you have any memories of favorite read-alouds from when you were little?
Mm. Winnie the Pooh, probably.
I will say Winnie the Pooh is when I realized, not realized, but when I felt reassured that you were not a dud and that you did, in fact, have a very good sense of humor. I remember it very clearly. There was the part in Winnie the Pooh where Pooh and Piglet are walking in circles around the rock in the snow and they think they're following something's footprints. And you started snickering, and I was like, oh, she gets it. She understands this humor. I'm so happy. That's just wonderful. She's getting it. So, yes, I love Winnie the Pooh, too. And we did read Understood Betsy aloud at least once. I feel like we've gone through it twice now.
Oh, yeah, we read Understood Betsy in Baby Island.
Baby Island. That was one of my favorites when I was little. Yes, I prioritized reading you my favorites. So we read Understood Betsy together and Baby Island together and Winnie the Pooh together. Winnie the Pooh is definitely our first non-picture book that we did. And so you would have been like 5 and Gemma would have been 3. This is why Gemma doesn't remember anything in life. It's because it happens probably at the right age for you, and then we skip doing it a second round for her, so she doesn't get it until the 3rd or 4th kid loops back around, and then she was like, I have echoes of memories of this. So we've been doing a lot of reading aloud in the last few years with the fire. I feel like we've had more time almost.
We seem to be driving more.
Yes. Listening to a lot of audiobooks together in the car has been really good. Do you have any favorites that we've been listening to?
The Skyward series by Brandon Sanderson and The Lord of the Rings, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. People don't know this, but every time Inara edits an episode and the guests or I start talking about Lord of the Rings, she starts crying. She is a diehard Lord of the Rings fan, and it makes her so emotional to hear other people loving it too. And I love that about her. She is not sure she's going to be able to actually talk about Lord of the Rings today because her feelings are so strong, but that is definitely her favorite series. Period in the world. But yes, I love Brandon Sanderson's Skyward series as well. We listened to that one on a whim. I had researched it a bit, and I am not a huge fan of reading series where the authors are still alive because I have this fear of something happening to them before they finish it. And I also have a fear of them like ruining the last book. And so I just want to hear people say, I loved the series until the last book and then it was terrible. And then I can decide if I even want to go down that road or not. But we did. We listened to Skyward when it was the only book out in that series. And it has been delightful listening to each book together as it's released. We have a lot of time to just listen to books together, the two of us, this year that we haven't had before because dance lessons are 45 minutes away. And so getting that hour and a half round trip every week and then sitting in the driveway when we get home. So we're probably at 2 hours every week of listening to audiobooks, just the two of us, which has been really good to listen to books that aren't little kid books or things that are appropriate. Like, they're not inappropriate books, right? But they're older kids. They have different issues that they're facing. What are some of the things that you like about the Skyward series?
Well, I've always loved Star Wars, and so that probably helped me fall in love with sci-fi, and that was... Skyward was probably the first sci-fi series that I had really read, and so that was really cool, and the characters are either really fun or, like, just really cool people in general.
Yeah.
So they're, like, relatable and real, I guess.
Yeah. I really like Spensa and her story arc of going from so much bravado that's clearly hiding her pain into a much more level-headed person who is getting some deep understanding about herself and processing through. So I think that's been been pretty cool to watch
mm-hmm.
as the stories unfold. I've also, on the sci-fi genre, really enjoyed listening to Enchantress from the Stars.
Yeah, that was fun to listen to because it felt very different than most stories I've read.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the different cultures were at different, like, stages in development. And so they're, like, the medieval people, and then there's the,
yeah,
like, modern people, and then higher tech people as well. And so it was just interesting to, like, have them all interact and have very different views on life and mm-hmm. how things should work.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there were some messages that book covered in a way that felt really genuine and not forced in the way that it was handled. I feel like mm-hmm. sometimes in books today, you can tell that the author is just trying to talk to you about a certain topic, and they want to convince you that everyone on one side was wrong or everyone on another side was right. And mm-hmm. I felt that this book being written, I think it was written in the 80s, but I could be off about that. It's at least 20 years old. It's a really good discussion starter on issues like colonization and what makes humans humans. And I think mm-hmm. we see that theme so much in sci-fi, which is part of why I love it as an autistic person trying to really figure out the whole what makes a human thing on a large scale, because the way I'm viewing the world is different from the way other people are viewing the world and mm-hmm. not viewing it, but experiencing it. The way I experience the world may be different from how my friends experience the world, and trying to find those common threads that are like, regardless yeah. of our experience, this is what makes us human. And so I think mm-hmm. I really liked that in Enchantress from the Stars. And then also very much in the third book in the Skyward series in Cytonic, mm-hmm. when they're dealing with an AI who is possibly becoming human, possibly not becoming human. And so that's the big discussion going on around his existence. And so I really like books that look at that theme.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some other books that we've read that have really been impactful, or that you're like, other people should read this? Have there been any books that you have not wanted to read, and then once you read it, you were like, oh, this is really good?
Maybe The Elephant in the Garden. That just, I don't know, it just seemed kind of boring to me at first. Sort of. Yeah. I don't know. The description seemed very different than how the story was starting.
Yeah, I can see that. But you ended up loving it, right?
Mm-hmm, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
That was very interesting. And then, sorry.
No, go ahead.
The Phantom Tollbooth as well. That seemed kind of strange at the beginning, but it was like really fun once you actually got into it.
Yeah, that's funny. I think the interesting thing with The Elephant in the Garden for us is usually if we're enjoying a book, that we got from the library, I'll just buy it and return the book to the library, and then we'll finish reading our own copy. But for some reason, I wasn't buying that one. I don't know why. I think we've bought it since then, but it had been returned to the library for months, and we still went back and checked it out again and finished it. And I think that that's a sign of like a book that just we couldn't let go of it. It was niggling in us that we wanted to know how it ended. And not every book does that. Some books you can start reading them and then you set them aside and you never come back and never miss it.
I have had that experience many times.
Yeah. I'm sure you're talking about books that I've assigned you to read that you casually dropped.
There was, like, a few months ago, this giant mountain of unfinished books on our desk that may or may not have been school books that you had given us.
And you may or may not have just reshelved them and moved on with your life.
I don't know what happened to them.
Classic. Way to make your confession in front of all these witnesses, Amara. I will say one of your school books that you have been reading lately that you were a little bit not resistant to, but you just, you have had a lot to say about the Aaron Burr Messner biography. Do you want to share a little bit about that book?
Oh, that was a Messner?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It seems to, like, make Aaron Burr much more of a hero than, like, any other biographies that I have ever read.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had absolutely done nothing wrong, like, ever. And, like, the way it described Hamilton, and I'm not saying Hamilton is, like, the best person or anything, but it basically said that, like, the way it described him was that, like, he had this hatred for Burr and just wanted to destroy his life for no good reason. And that was interesting. And Burr was completely, like, innocent and had no idea that anything was going wrong and that he had offended anyone or anything. I don't know. It was interesting.
That's funny. And it was extra interesting because you had seen Hamilton, the production, and then you had read a biography on Hamilton.
And it was Hamilton and Burr.
Yes, you'd read a biography on Hamilton and Burr, so that one is pretty evenly honest about both of them and their issues. And then you'd read parts of a couple biographies about Jefferson. Yes, I did notice that you did not finish those. But you've read parts of them. And then you read this one on Burr, and you very much were like, oh my goodness, this is so slanted. And I think that that's a good experience in biography reading to help us learn that we have to discern and we have to not just take one person's word for it. Because mm-hmm. if you only hear one side of the story, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah. The other book about Hamilton and Burr that I read did not, like, frame Hamilton or Burr in the way that this book did. So that was kind of what bothered me more, was that...
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it was from Burr's perspective, half of it, so... And it mm-hmm. still didn't make him seem like the most amazing person who has ever lived.
Yeah. I believe the Hamilton and Burr biography that you read was The Landmark. And then the Aaron Burr that you read was The Messner, just for anyone listening who's curious and has those books on their shelves. So we had some questions from the group, from people who wanted to ask you certain things. So one question that we had was, having a home library is sadly not something that every child grows up with. And was there a time where you realized that this was unique in your experience? And how did that make you feel?
I'd say after our fire happened, we had to box up the library, which is a whole lot of books. And we had a bunch of like friends and their kids come over. And just everyone being shocked at how many books we had was... new to me. And then we had some difficulties, and we had to unbox and rebox all the books, and it struck me that this is not something that most kids will have to do. Like, it's not a normal
event. Chore.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was pretty rough, the unboxing and reboxing. So when Knightley was 5 and had just started talking and getting, like, good sentences is when he came to me and he was like, Mommy, do we live in a library? And I was like, well, what is a library? And he's like, a library is a place with lots of books. I was like, well, then, yeah, I think we do live in a library. And he's like, I thought so. And he walked off and he was all happy about it. So somebody said, growing up in a family with super cool, uniquely named children, if you someday have children of your own, are you thinking that you will follow the trend, choose classical or modern names, or what do you think you'll do? So for people who don't know, the five kids have multiple names each. They each have three names and then a last name. And Inara, do you want to share what your name is?
Actually, my middle names are probably the most modern of any of ours.
Everybody.
Yeah. Inara Catherine Grace is my full name.
Yep.
And then Sauter.
Right. And then the other kids are Gemma Anastasia Trinity and Knightley Tobias Maxson and Everhart Azriel Maximus and Leora Rose Serenity Jane. We call her Lily, but she goes by Boo. So she's extra. So she really needed an extra name. But so what do you think, Inara? I know we actually talk about this type of thing and joke about it a lot.
I would probably go with more unusual names.
Yeah.
Probably like Evenstar.
Yes. We have conversations sometimes and joke about how like probably four of our kids would have unique names for their kids. And then the fifth would just go straight laced old school. So I'd be like, these are my grandkids. Here's Gladriel and Evenstar and Pippin. And over here we have Dave. It'll probably be something like that. Here's Steve. Over in the corner.
So. Lily is going to name her kid Legolas.
Oh, absolutely. There is not a doubt that if she can find a man willing to agree to that, that she will not name a child Legolas. So you mentioned earlier that you like to write. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and maybe the writing program that you and Gemma have been using this year?
So I probably started writing, I think I was 12, I think. And I was writing what I was hoping was going to be a novel, and it was really bad, and we are not going to talk about it. And then it was really bad. It was kind of a ripoff of the Wingfeather Saga, in a way. At least it reminded me a lot of it. But, well, I stopped writing it because I got a better idea for a book.
A conscience.
So... Then I wrote, it took me like three years,
mm-hmm.
And I wrote a sci-fi trilogy that needs editing and might not be a trilogy. It might be just one book in the end, I don't know. And right now I am writing a fantasy novel that will hopefully become a series, but I am almost finished with writing the first book.
That's fantastic. And I do know that your beta readers have all really enjoyed your books. And your first trilogy that you wrote, you started it at like 12 or 13, like you said.
Yeah, I was 13, I think.
And then it took you like 3 years to write it by mm-hmm. the time it was done. And then the last two books, I'm pretty sure you pumped both of them out in a year.
Yeah, it was less than a year. It took me like 3 years to write the first book.
Yes. And so being someone who has dyslexia, would you like to share how you go about writing these books? Like, do you use paper and pen? Do you use a typewriter?
I use an app on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say I'm a panster, but when I get to, like, the end of a book, I, for some reason, always need to, like, write out a timeline, just, like, the biggest mm-hmm. events that still need to happen. Like, I,
mm-hmm.
for some reason, find myself needing to do that when I get to the end of a book. And I don't really have any habits or rules that I follow, I guess. I just, like, avoid my siblings and write, I guess.
Just go off with your phone. So your phone has been really helpful because it does autocorrect and it autofills. So that allows you to put the words out faster and keep up with your stream of mm-hmm. thought.
Yeah.
correct me if I'm wrong, is the app that you're currently using Pages?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in our family, our kids tend to get their first iPhone when they're three. We just give them locked down old iPhones of ours.
Starting at nightly.
Yeah, starting.
We didn't even watch TV when I was little.
That's great. Inara and Gemma had a hard life of just being read aloud to and playing with clay and having this beautiful little childhood.
And it was a nice childhood. I'm just upset whenever the little kids are like, what? No phones for a day or something. I'm like, in the olden days, there were no phones.
So, yes. So, nightly came along and was very autistic, and he needed way more auditory input than anyone could provide. And so we started using devices more with him, and
then he could read before he could talk.
Yep, he could read before he could talk because of games he was playing on his phone, and he was probably reading at a third grade level before he could speak at all, and that was because of his device usage and reading closed captioning on TVs. Mm-hmm. And then we got you and Gemma phones at the same time that Knightley got his phone, and mm-hmm. you guys got them for audiobooks and the camera and video functions more than anything, because your brother's phones have games on them and you girls are still the gameless. Because I want to know what you're doing when you're on your phone. And so anytime I look at you and you're on your phone, I know that you're writing or reading the Bible app. And so I'm just happy because I know what you're doing and I don't have to be like, are they on Word Games? Are they doing another crossword puzzle? So, so our kids get devices young, which I know a lot of people don't, and that's fine. Whatever works for each individual family is what we support and want to help you meet those needs in your family for either audiobooks or books on the shelf to read. And I'm just sharing with people what we have done and what has worked for us. And so Gemma and Inara both are writing on their phones. And then what is the writing program that you got for Christmas?
For Christmas, my aunt's with suggestions from mom.
What? No, Santa.
paid for me and my sister to, like, a year membership or whatever for the Young Writers Workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has been beneficial for my writing, because, like, I want to get better at it, but I didn't entirely know how and, like, what needed to be fixed and where I needed to grow and things like that. And so that has definitely helped.
That's awesome. I've seen it help for you and Gemma both. It has a whole bunch of, I think I saw somewhere in their marketing at some point that they called it, like, the writer's Netflix, where there's a ton of short videos on different topics, such as how to world build, how to write dialogue, how to write scenery. And then they also have a separate section that is a closed social media. So it's just for the kids that are in this program. And they only open memberships, I think, like twice a year for these little windows. So it's pretty vetted who is in this, and the kids are able to share what they've written with each other and offer feedback. And Inara wrote a hysterical short story on the main characters of The Lord of the Rings set in modern day, going to a strip mall. And I will share that in the show notes, because it really is, like, even if my kid hadn't written it, it's still just funny. So it was well received in the feedback from her peers as well. And so that's been a really cool resource, and we will link to it in the show notes for people that want to look into it and maybe get on the mailing list for the next time the memberships open. But that's been been pretty cool. One question we had from someone was, as somebody who really loved Edith Nesbit and still does, what other books would you recommend for people who liked Edith Nesbit's books?
I'd say Swallows and Amazons. Me and Gemma, I don't remember how old we were when we read that, but that was very fun to read. Just like normal kids going on adventures. They don't have to be like super powered or anything. They don't need to fight dragons to find adventure.
And I don't think we've finished that series. We really should consider, I mean, maybe you guys did and I just don't even know. I didn't finish that series. I want to go back and finish it. That much I know. Do you have a favorite Lord of the Rings character and why?
I mean, I really like the Four Hobbits, and I cannot figure out which one I like most. I've tried very hard, but it's always, like, they're all so close that I can't, like, they're all so close on my scale of best characters that I can't really, like, decide which one I like better. I know that that's, like, a lot of people, but...
It's like having children. You love them all best for different things. Like, all my favorite for different reasons. So which world would you rather live in? Middle Earth or Star Wars Galaxy?
Middle Earth, I think.
I feel like this one's a trick question.
Yeah, I mean, like, there are so many different places in Star Wars.
Right?
Like, Naboo is very different than Mustafar. And
yes, I feel like there's got to be a planet out there in the Star Wars galaxies that basically is Middle Earth. I mean, maybe Middle Earth is there. Maybe they are in the same world. And
I think I heard that Earth is in the Star Wars world. It's called, like,
George
Eartha
Lucas
or something.
Just didn't tell us. I bet. I bet Middle Earth is there somewhere. There's a lot of pointy ears that are unaccounted for otherwise. Is there any current modern series that you have read that you would love to write a movie script for or see on screen?
The Skyward series, that would be really fun to watch.
Yeah.
It's not really a series yet, but Jack Zulu and the Waylander's Key. That would also be very fun to see on TV. And it was originally written to be on TV, right?
Yeah. That's one of those wrote one way, reversed course, wrote it the other way, and hoping it'll end up back the first way again. That would be really cool to see. So somebody had a really good question that I think comes up a lot in the group at large. And so it would be interesting to hear how you would answer it. And it is asking how I taught the kids to, and how you have learned to actually read from the shelves, because she's having a hard time getting her kids to even look at the book collection.
I guess when I was younger, I kind of just read whatever you suggested. But then there was a time in my life where you told me that I could read, like, anything on any of the shelves in our house, except for, like, this one shelf that was, like, priceless.
Any shelf you could reach.
Yeah, that was basically what it was. And so that probably helped me to start reading more, because I didn't feel like, I kind of felt like only the books that you suggested were the books that I could or should read. But if I found a book that I thought would be really interesting, or it was on something that I was interested in, that I could still read that, though it hadn't been, like, recommended for me. So I just kind of went and looked for things that I was interested in. Like, I was very interested in Benjamin Franklin at that time, and I literally read, like, every book that we had on Benjamin Franklin.
I think we had 8. I do think that you read through 8 Benjamin Franklin books.
I don't know what was with my sudden complete interest in Benjamin Franklin.
Fascination.
Yeah, I remember you would always, like, come home from a bookstore and go, like, hey, I found a new Benjamin Franklin book for you. And then I would, like, disappear for 2 days while I read it.
I think it was the same with whales.
And like, whales and sharks.
Yeah. And then the other thing you really liked that I had a hard time finding, but then I found a book and it was way advanced for you, but you still sat and like struggled through as much of it as you could, was on the Loch Ness Monster. I found a book Jeannie Bendick. And it's really hard to find books on Nessie that aren't just...
I read that whole book.
Yeah, I think eventually you did. I think at first you were kind of like, whoa, this is a lot. And you like skimmed it. But then you came back and you went all the way through it. So yeah, we're Nessie believers, in case anyone's curious. She's out there somewhere.
And also Robin Hood. I really liked Robin Hood as well. So I would read most books that we had on Robin Hood.
Yeah. We didn't have a lot of younger readers for Robin Hood. It was mostly the classics.
Yeah. I remember reading like audiobooks and like mm-hmm. there were some like English fairy tales or something that had Robin Hood stories in them. And so I liked those.
Yeah, I think the James Baldwin 50 Stories Retold
has Robin Hood
in there. Something else that you were able to do with audiobooks, since you were listening to so many of them, was one, you were getting through a lot because you were able to do things with your hands at the same time, which mm-hmm. held your interest. And then you also were able to listen to books that may have seemed a bit dry if you were trying to read them yourself. But when I was growing up, I was not allowed to read things that had Greek and Roman mythology in them. And I decided to do the classic parenting trick of doing the opposite thing with your child that happened with you. And so I just got you all the good children's books on Greek and Roman mythology, because I had sat down to read you one and realized I couldn't pronounce any of the names because I'd spent no time with them. And so we started listening to an audiobook of it, which was very helpful. I'm still terrible at it. But you just started consuming mythology. And mm-hmm. then one day you just came to me with this observation that you had made. And do you remember what it was?
I think I said that, like, I liked Christianity more because in mythology, the gods don't care for the humans. They're constantly, like, using them and just killing whoever they want. And it's just very different than Christianity, where we are saved. The humans in mythology are kind of just pretty much ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just kind of like lessers, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, they don't really have any real importance mm-hmm. to the gods.
Yeah. You'd said that, and also you'd mentioned that you felt they were very self-absorbed and you mm-hmm. liked that we had a God who cared about us. And I thought that was beautiful. And I was like, yeah, I think that if you give yourself a good solid dunking into the mess that was the gods of old, that it really does provide a stark contrast. Recently, we had the opportunity to read the beta book for The Red Door, and you read that. I read that aloud to you and Gemma. So you haven't read the final copy that is being published in September, so you don't know the new ending, but you did read the beta book. And what were some of your takeaways? Because that was a pretty powerful book for us, because I think it was the first time we really felt like we saw ourselves in a character. And so what was your takeaway on Aster?
Well, Aster is a dreamer, which is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are found out to be a dreamer, you get sent through this door and your family is shamed and no one knows where the door leads to. And so she has to hide the fact that she is a dreamer, so she has to basically mirror everyone else around her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was interesting, because it seems almost as if she's neurodivergent.
Mm-hmm.
And how you have to like mask and mirror what you see and like watch other people to see how they are acting so that you know how to act as well.
Yeah.
Or to counteract.
Right.
So she just kind of, her character was the most like neurodivergent character that I had ever seen.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even on purpose. It just happened to me that that's how.
Yeah. But she is. I mean, her brain is working differently from other people's brains. She's dreaming when very few do. And it is not socially accepted. And she does. She has to mirror the behavior of people around her in order to appear like them and react to things the way they would, so that they don't notice that she just had a spell or is, you know, like, oh, I just had a dizzy spell, that type of thing. Like, she just had a dreaming spell. And just even from her dad, she has to behave a certain way in order to not be detected. And yeah, I think it raised some really good conversations for the three of us, you, me, and Gemma, about the burden of masking. Because that was one of the things I really liked that it showed, was how exhausted she is and how much energy goes into it. And so I think I would just say to people who have friends who are on the spectrum or are neurodiverse, if you think to yourself, they're not that neurodiverse or they're not that autistic, there's really no such thing. Like, it's not a sliding bar, it's a pie. And so if you're looking at the pie graph, their challenges may be in different areas on the pie graph, but their challenges still take a toll in trying to live in a world that is not designed for them currently. I wouldn't say the world isn't created for us, but I would say that our lifestyles in the Western world do not accommodate it well. Yeah, we weren't made to fit society as it is now. Mm-hmm. We were definitely made to be in nature. We were definitely made to work with our hands and hyper-focus on things and do them really well. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of ancient craftsmen hadn't been on the spectrum in one way or another with their attention to detail and ability to do the same thing over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so if you have friends and you think they appear normal, it has taken a lot of effort to do that, and it's being done for your comfort, and sometimes offering to let your friend just be themselves and let their mask down around you can be a true gift. So I just want to encourage people in that way. I know it's been really valuable for Nara to have friends who are neurodivergent in different ways than she is, because then they're able to just be accepting of each other's different quirks and differences. And I'm really appreciating some of the books that we've been finding recently that showcase that and highlight it, but not even calling it out, just as this is a type of person and this is a type of way people think and this is a type of way people are, and it's just part of the human experience. So that's been really welcome, and I think we really enjoyed the Red Door for that. So I think, Inara, if you are willing to talk about it, I would love to hear some of why you love The Lord of the Rings.
I
honestly... Just so everyone knows, Inara edits all the podcasts. So anything I ever have shared about her has gone through the Inara level of editing, and she is okay with it being shared. So it makes it really easy to share things about her, because I know that she's going to be able to take it out if she's not comfortable with it, because I don't want to overshare about my kids. But
I'm honestly not sure why I love it so much, but like when we had 6 hours left of The Return of the King, I spent, I was sobbing like every other day just thinking about it ending. I don't really know why it like affected me so much, but it did.
Yeah.
Well, I really like the characters. They just like very real, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, they have real struggles, and you can just relate to them.
Yeah.
Like, there's got to be, like, one character that you relate to somehow.
Yeah.
Because there's a very large cast. And the world building is also very amazing. And just the story mm-hmm. itself is also, like, very deep and thought out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, very real, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And the movies were messed up.
That's like an entire episode.
Sorry, I'm not doing that.
If you go off on that rant, we'll never get out of here.
The books were better, okay? I don't know.
Yes, you are definitely a firm member of the books were better club.
I funded that club.
You funded that. You're so funny. Oh, man. Founding member. So, do you think that it is important to continue having read-alouds as you get older? Or is that something that you think there was, like, a good age that we should have just phased it out? Or is it still something valuable to you? Just to be clear, even if you think you should have phased it out at some point, it's still happening to you. I'm just curious what your own opinion is at this time of life.
Personally, like, for our family, I like read alouds because we usually, like, all do it together.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like a family event sort of thing. And though the three younglings may be groveling and complaining the entire time, we're still having family time. But I honestly find it easier to read aloud more than reading.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just reading it yourself. I think it's more engaging to read aloud than by yourself.
Yeah. You and Gemma do a lot of reading together of each other's stories.
Mm-hmm.
And reading each other's stories aloud back and forth. And I think that's been really beneficial for your writing as well, for both of you to hear your stories read out loud.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I also think that a large part of you doing that probably was growing up in a read aloud culture in the first place.
Yeah, probably.
I don't think all the brilliant ideas just come to you. Some of them have a source.
Yeah, it definitely helps my writing because reading it aloud is, at least it feels very different than reading it in your head. And mm-hmm. so, like, also someone else reading it aloud seems different than when you're reading it to yourself because it might sound weird or they might put emphasis on a different word
mm-hmm.
than you in your head had thought. And so you have to go back and change something or it just might not be grammatically correct or...
Grammatically.
All right. I'm very happy I'm the editor.
I love you. That was beautiful.
This is why I use my phone. It is autocorrect.
All works out so well. We're all learning and growing. It's all good. So what is there a book that you are looking forward to reading?
Like, just in general, or that I have to, like, wait to read?
Something that you're looking forward to that is coming out or that you've been told you have to wait to read, just something that you're like, oh, I'm looking forward to reading that book.
Well, the last Skyward book mm-hmm. that's coming out. That's exciting.
November.
And
I know you have a big stack of books by your bed. I didn't know if there was anything in that pile that you were like, oh, that would be nice to read soon.
Well, I want to read The Red Door when it comes out, and The Similar Then, though I'm kind of very daunted by it.
Mm-hmm. You just need to get some good charts and graphs, and then you'll be able to follow along, and it'll go great. Something else I had wanted to say earlier when we were talking about encouraging kids to read from the shelves is that for years we had a school requirement where all of our science books are shelved together in the basement. And it was just this rule that you were supposed to do 15 minutes of reading from the shelf every day. So this was when our lives were like totally hectic and chaotic, and we weren't in seasons of a lot of structure, but I wanted them to do science, but we weren't going to be doing hands-on projects, and we didn't have a specific science curriculum that we were following at the time. But you guys just read widely and then deeply when you wanted to on a whole lot of different topics off the science shelf. And I think that made the science shelf kind of inviting and less overwhelming, because it was just like, the deal was you didn't have to commit to the book. You didn't have to read more than 15 minutes, period. And you didn't have to pick up the same book tomorrow. So if you just found a chapter that looked interesting or a few pages that were interesting, you could just read it. And the nice thing about nonfiction books is it's not like it's a full story that you're just jumping into.
Yeah, basically any books that had to do with the ocean. I didn't like most of the other ones.
It's okay. You don't have to like everything you read. Sometimes you just read it because it's part of the assigned school to meet state requirements.
So, can I vote on that?
When you're 18.
Yeah, can I vote on the state
requirements? Yes. Oh, man. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to come, Inara. I really appreciate you coming out from behind the curtain of the editing booth and letting people hear from you and not just about you from me.
And like those delightful photos that everyone has seen.
Oh my goodness. So I don't know if people understand this, but pretty much any time a picture of someone from my family shows up on Instagram, it's because there is this glitch on Facebook where if I post on my personal wall, it will populate it to Instagram, not to any of the Facebook groups and nothing. And I have checked all my settings and everything. So for the past like year and a half, I have barely posted anything on my personal wall just because it was so annoying having to like go straight to Instagram and delete it. But sometimes I forget. I just get caught up in the moment. I see something adorable that my kid has done. I want to share it with family. And so I'll post it on my wall. And then 2 hours later, it will be the most popular post that I've had in weeks on Instagram. And I have all these comments. And then I'll go to the kids and be like, I'm so sorry it happened again. Can I leave this up or not? And Inara's like, you're always posting the most embarrassing photos. I just think they're adorable. Ridiculous. You don't look ridiculous. You look like you're having fun and living life. But yeah, so if you see pictures of my family and there are no hashtags attached, it's because it came from Facebook. So you're seeing something that is a gift. But all right, well, hopefully Inara will be back in the future in some of our follow-up interviews with different guests. Rachel Lulich of The Red Door told us that she's writing a series on Civil Air Patrol, and so we're hoping Inara will come back and talk about those with us when she's read them and share a little bit about her Civil Air Patrol experience also. So one last question, Inara, is there anything that you do for self-care?
I guess I go somewhere quiet, like away from
you can say the bathroom. This is a lot of moms. We all go sit in the bathroom and lock the door.
Well, thankfully our bedroom also has a lock on the door, so yeah, one of those two. I just kind of hide from my siblings, I guess.
Hide and eat some chocolate.
No, I'm not. I mean, maybe.
You know it's true. Fruit snacks. Sometimes the fruit snacks go missing in your quiet time.
No. 7 years ago.
Yes.
That was a stage, okay.
9-year-old Inara self-care. Oh, man. Yes, finding pieces of quiet in a home with this many voices is definitely an act of self-care. And I try to support that as much as I can, because I know you support me when I need to get some quiet too. So thank you for that.
Yep. I also go somewhere and cry about Lord of the Rings sometimes. I mean, not really anymore, but like, I don't know what my problem was. It was honestly very emotional for some no good reason. I don't know.
You know what? Here's the thing. I don't think it's no good reason. I think there is a reason. I don't think it had to have a reason. We had a traumatic few years in our family with the house fire and you losing your entire bedroom and all your earthly belongings except for what you had with you at your grandparents that weekend. And
my ball gown, thankfully.
Yeah, and your ball gown that the Lord spared in the fire. But other than that, like, I don't think you kids have had clear opportunities to process. Like, we've done the best we can as parents to help you process and work through it and have the support that you need. But I think as a teenager going through this, there was a lot that you were still holding on to inside. And so I think, you know, I've shared it before. I will share it again, I am sure. I was hesitant to start reading those books because I knew the journey that those hobbits were going to go on. And I knew I was on a hard journey and I didn't want to have more hard journey around me. But I knew that their journey had so many points of light and hope. And I knew that I could anchor onto those in my own journey. And so I think that's what it was for you. I think as you went on this journey with these hobbits, you were able to process through some of the grief, some of the loss, some of the fear, some of the pain, some of the stress, some of the lost relationships that we have gone through in the last few years. And I think those were healthy cries. I think that this is part of the beauty of the right story in your life at the right time is this ability to have it just be a cathartic experience, because mm-hmm. there's really no reasonable reason for the amount of crying that you
it was unhealthy. I don't know.
That you had, except for the fact that you were processing, and I was glad to be alongside you as you were able to just get this out and go through it as many times as you needed to. And when you ended the last book, you picked right back up on book one and went through them immediately again. And I think that was so healthy for you. And I'm glad that these books came to you when they did, because I love you and I want you to be not carrying all the emotion inside and that weight. I want it to come out and for you to feel lighter. I want good things for you. I love you.
Love you too.
All right. Okay, now that we've had this like therapy editing moment,
that. I'm going to edit all that out.
Thank you all for being here with us. And we have all the books we talked about today are in the show notes on the website, reshelvingalexandria.com. You can find all of our podcast information there. And a literary database that's free for anyone. Share it with your friends, full of some of our favorite living books, full of truth, beauty, and goodness. And remember, everyone, the stories are truer than true.